Well, thanks very much. It's a real pleasure to be invited here. I gave a talk here, I guess, about 6 months ago as part of the AMI Forum, and it was a real delight to talk to another community. And so here I am again. Couldn't have been too terrible a talk. So I want to start by showing you some astronomical images, just to get the ball rolling here. These aren't the best reproductions by any stretch of the imagination. It's a laser printer with a sort of a dot matrix representation. This is the galaxy Messier 51, visible to the naked eye. This is taken at a 1 meter diameter telescope, of course, looking up a bright, clear sky. This is a nice spiral galaxy. It's very typical of what we do with CCDs. And, of course, the whole idea is CCDs are at the focal plane of your microscopes, and a lot of what we do looking up for you, I guess you guys also look up, but in a different way. It's very similar. I'm going to talk a little bit about the history of CCDs because I think it's always nice to get a little bit of context about the technology or the techniques that you're involved with to understand that it's part of a continuum. Perhaps the people who are just starting out in the field may not be especially receptive to finding out what happened 20 years ago because it's not terribly relevant, but if they think ahead to what they might be experiencing 20 years from now, maybe the past can serve a bit as a prelude. This is the past. If we take that previous image, and I'll do just a little bit of a simulation, and extract just 100 pixel by 100 pixel image, this is what you'd get. So you see a couple of the stars. These are foreground stars, the image. You can see the pixels rather nicely. This was state-of-the-art technology way back when I did my PhD thesis. 100 by 100 image detector was commercially available, made in Palo Alto from Fairchild Semiconductors, and this is what you could do. And the community was very excited at the time. Then about 5 or 6 years later, the field of view, the number of pixels expanded quite a bit. This was 512 by 320. And so you can get quite a bit more information in this detector. And this was another really big step forward in the astronomical technology right at the, right around 1980, 1981. Then right around that time, NASA got interested, and in fact, the Hubble Space Telescope flew with four of these detectors that are 800 pixels on a side. For a composite of 1,600 total, and this is what you see of that galaxy if you were using such a detector. This is a giant step forward, not only because the Hubble Space Telescope was a great telescope after a few years, that is, but because the detectors were also quite good. In fact, it was the CCD technology won out in the proposal process for a space telescope by a whisker. People were not really all that keen on investing in a new technology, but it worked out well. Cost about $50 or $60 million just to make the four, I guess it was eight CCDs that flew on space telescopes. These are 20-year-old dollars of 20 years ago. It was a very expensive operation. And then we get back to the galaxy. And then just to kind of put a composite just to go through it again, here we have all of the images from the first 100 by 100 to the space telescope one to one now, which is 2K, 2048 by 2048. And you might say to me, hey, wait a minute. We have a detector that's 4K by 4K. Isn't that right? Well, this was state-of-the-art. 2K by 2K was actually state-of-the-art about 10 years ago or so. And in fact, it was a La Jolla company, SAIC, Science Applications International, that pioneered the development of the 2K detectors. And so things have marched on, of course, with the 4K detectors. In fact, the 2K detectors, I have a little handout here. It's a little bit fragile. Try not to drop it on the floor. It'll crack. It's, of course, not functioning CCD wafer that comes out of the fabrication line. So this is diced, and four of the 2K CCDs are placed on here. So if you imagine that you have a little cross or in the center, this is the gap between the four different detectors. If you erase that gap, put the CCDs together, that's about what you'd get now if you bought a 4K CCD camera for your electron microscope. In fact, it's very close. The pixel size is the same as what's available commercially now. So I'll pass this around. It's, of course, non-functional and very dirty. But once I was giving a talk to a bunch of fundraisers, important fundraisers, and I took this out to show everybody, and it was all pieces. It had crack. I go, uh-oh, there goes my funding and my tenure. But this one was intact. So that's to motivate the idea of size. Let me just show a little bit about what's being done here, just very, very diagrammatically. On the left, we have an illustration of the basic structure of the 4K devices and the 2K devices that are used in electron microscopy, where you're it's very similar to the CCD I'm passing around, except it's one detector, but it's split into four quadrants. And these little arrows indicate the direction and the place where the actual signal is extracted from the CCD and then transferred to the computer. The idea being that you do it from all four corners simultaneously. The idea there is not take too much time to read out the image. Something that astronomers do a lot because they don't particularly mind having these gaps that the people in this room, I think, would find not suitable, is they place these in a loose mosaic. And you can build this up to be quite large. This four-detector mosaic, there are several of those built. There's one that's built that's about 70 of these. I think it's 72 of these detectors. It's about this big. It costs about $5 or maybe $10 million. And they're put right at the focal planes of large telescopes. And the advantage is they have a very large field of view. There are a few of those in operation in astronomy. So the size of CCDs, the size of detectors is one of the really nice things about them. Of course, CCDs are competing with film. And it's been a really hard competition for CCDs to get as large, or at least not too terribly much smaller than film. But now that they're not too terribly much smaller than film, CCDs are starting to be used in your community. In astronomy, film has been not used very much at all for 20 years because the astronomers have generally been studying objects that are smaller and are than the competitive advantage of CCDs in areas other than size are much more compelling in astronomy. One of them is quantum efficiency. If we simply plot wavelength here in the optical path band versus the efficiency, that is what fraction of the photons incident upon the CCD are actually detected. This is a real device. It's actually that type of device, the CCD that I'm passing around. If you go and process it nicely, you have to thin it and put anti-reflection coatings and charge up the surface. You can get a efficiency curve like that. You see, that really is 100% at the top axis. So somewhere around 98% of the light in this relatively large passband in the visible light spectrum is detected, results in usable signal on the CCD. Over here on the right is the red. The silicon gets transparent. The photons pass through. So when you get to the infrared over here, it doesn't detect anything. Over on the left here in the blue and ultraviolet, there is loss of sensitivity simply due to the anti-reflection coating. You can go all the way to the left into the X-rays and far ultraviolet. It forms an excellent detector. In electron microscopes, they're generally scintillators that bring the electron signal into the visible light region. So you're in this nice region where the quantum efficiency is quite high. So we have the size of CCDs, and the quantum efficiency is really strong advantages, strong benefits of using CCDs. The third one I'll put here is a little bit technical. I won't go into this. This is a fundamental calibration called the photon transfer curve. The main thing I want to say is that if this is a Fairchild CCD, and the noise figure that I put there, 10 point some electrons, that's a noise figure associated with reading out the signal from the CCD. And it's a noise, it's an uncertainty that's added by the whole detector and the external electronics. This noise figure is 10 electrons is relatively high by the standards of CCDs, and it's relatively typical of what you get in electron microscopes for reasons I'll say in a minute. But the relatively tolerably decent noise figures are a third really compelling, good reason or not too terribly bad of advantage of a disadvantage for why CCDs are used. And then just to get back a little bit to my historical perspective, I plotted versus time, kind of just drawing from my memory. In the early days in 75 is where we had this 100 by 100 pixel detector. And if I plot just the logarithm of the number of pixels, just to be sensible, we get up to several tens of millions of pixels that are available. Well, were available a few years ago when I made this view graph. It's gone up a little bit here, but not terribly much. So we get big detectors, quantum efficiencies that are approaching 100%. We can't do any better. And readout noises that under some circumstances are very low. Under other circumstances, mostly depending upon how the rate at which you want to read your CCD, it increases the noise. But if you take a long time to read the CCD, you can get low noise. These are the three figures of merits of CCDs that have improved dramatically over the years and have brought CCDs to the point now where they're pretty much, where they're approaching fundamental physical limits such as 100% efficiency and zero electron readout noise. The size can, of course, keep on going forever, but there's a real cost to that. And, of course, that will happen. That will happen quite a bit over the next few years. So that's 25 years, I suppose, in a nutshell. Okay, we're going to switch to the technical ideas of how CCDs work. Any questions on a little survey? Yeah, film. Film depends a lot on what type of film you're using. If you have trade-offs between resolution of the film and the efficiency. The film that astronomers have used that has pretty good resolution has typically had quantum efficiencies of 3, 4, 5%. Enhanced quantum efficiency film with larger grains is typically around 15, 20% at the optimum color band. So there you got a large improvement. I should say another very strong figure of merit of CCDs compared to film is that there's an intrinsic uncertainty in the amount of light that film is detecting that has to do with two things. One is the graininess of the film. The second is that every piece of film has a different structure on the micro level. The grains are distributed differently in film. And because you only use the film once, you have great trouble calibrating what that graininess is. The CCD is used over and over again, so you calibrate just what the sensitivity variations are. So the ultimate accuracy in measuring the light with CCDs is very high, limited by pretty much by how much trouble you want to put into it, much better than a percent. But the intrinsic inaccuracy in film work is very high because it's one at a time. Other questions? Okay, switching again to my little cartoons here. If you imagine that CCD looking on edge, okay, so we're looking at the thinness of the silicon here, and I'm going to try and go through describing the basic process that makes the CCD a CCD. CCD stands for charge-coupled device. It was a technology invented at Bell Labs in New Jersey. They published a paper in 1968, Boyle and Smith, that described this. The basic idea is that we want to couple between external electric fields that are controlled by wires that go to little conductive elements that are placed right on the surface of the CCD. And so we want to couple between the charges that are resident inside the CCD and the outside world through these electric fields and electric voltages. So it's actually a well-named device. We're coupling to the charges in the silicon. The charges result from photons in the case of electron microscopy or astronomy, because we're using the CCD as a detector. You can also inject charges into this, and you can use this as an electronic signal processor. Initially, they were thought of being used as memories, as shift registers, as fast Fourier transformers, as all kinds of analog signal processing elements. And to some extent, there's been modest success with that, but it's really as imagers, as light detectors, it was. As light detectors that they've been really successful. So anyway, the photons result in little charges being detected throughout this entire region, and then they collect here where the electrodes are held at a positive voltage. These are minority carriers. Think of them as negatively charged electrons. And they will localize themselves where the charge is positive. Okay? So what you do when you're taking your exposure, you're illuminating your CCD on your electron microscope, is everything is quiescent during the time when the image is being accumulated. So you have, in this case, you have two phases here that are held negative voltage here and here, and the charges are repelled from that. They are attracted by the positive ones, so they accumulate there, and they just accumulate during the acquisition of the image on the CCD. Okay? Nothing mysterious there. Then we, in the case of astronomy, we close the shutter, stop light from coming in. In the case of electron microscopy, you turn the voltage down, you pulse the voltage, but you stop the accumulation of the charges on the CCD, and you begin the process of readout. You want to measure what each of these packets contains. Now you got 16 million of them, or you got 4 million of them. You got to measure each one of them. Okay, and they're all going to be different because that's what an image is. You have all these pixels and they all have different levels of charge. So how do you do it? Well, we use the charge coupling technique. Imagine this charge is here. Let's make this electrode positive. So we have two of them that are positive. This charge is going to be shared between those two regions. We also do it here, so it's going to be shared there. And then the next time step, you make this one negative. Keep this one positive, this charge will be localized only on that electrode. It will move over. Now this is physically. This isn't phase space or reciprocal space or Fourier transform space or anything like that. This is X. Okay? This is X. We have Y in this direction. We have Z going up and down, but this is X. So if you look at that CCD, you can imagine a charge on one of those pixels. You can't quite see the pixels, but you know they're there because it has colors. It refracts. Or diffract, excuse me. And you're actually physically moving the charge over by one element. Well, you keep doing this. And you keep doing this, and this cartoon shows a picture from above. Now you're looking down on the CCD. It's just what I was showing before. This charge is localized here. It's shared between these two electrodes. Then it's moved over by one element. You do it again. You share it with the neighbor here, and then you put it exclusively in that neighbor. Then you do it again here and here. You don't do it just for one electrode, but you do it for 16 million at a time. So the one down here, this phase 2 is connected with a wire to phase 2 here, and so that will undergo the same process. And you always try and maintain a gap. You see, there's always a gap there of negative electrode in between these two charges. If you don't do that, your image is going to smear like crazy. Now, I've done it a lot. You guys, you know, you're one step away, so it won't happen to you. And over the top, I'm showing these are the voltages that are applied to these electrodes. You have negative voltages and positive voltages. So you can trace it there. There's the phase 2 is high, and then you have phase 2 and 3 are both high, and then just phase 3 is low, and so on. Anyway, if you look at those things at the top, that looks a lot like electrical signals. Like you see those all the time, right? It's just a time history. It's just a time variable in that direction. You just have voltages there. That makes it so that the whole world of electronics is something that you can use. And so the whole game of CCDs is just having wires that come out of the CCD that the manufacturer provides for you, and you give it these signals. They're just a time history of signals to move the charge around. Okay? That's it. That's the CCD effect. Okay, let me just try and transform this idea from one dimension to two dimensions. This is actually a nice, this is actual real design a couple of design layers of the CCD that was given to me by people at SAIC a long time ago who were doing this. They had models, they were designing the CCDs with AutoCAD. You know AutoCAD? It's a mechanical designing program. And they worked with the manufacturer, of course, told them what to do, but they would lay it out and draw the pixels and all this sort of stuff. And they had this nice view graph for me that they gave me. So what we do, as I said, you have these electrodes going to all 16 million or all 4 million of your pixels in the CCD, and you move them all at once. What you do is, this is called a parallel transfer. That's all in parallel, you move all the charge. What you do in this case is you move it down, and the whole image moves down. So what happens at the bottom? It spills off the edge into this special structure. Only, and what you do is you make it move one whole line, and this line on the edge will spill into this structure here, and then you stop. You don't keep moving the charge on the image. You stop, and then you want to transfer this charge, this single line of charge, with another set of electrical signals to come in here. You want to move it off to the left. And there you're moving just one line, and you're moving it in the orthogonal direction. And when it comes to the edge here, it'll spill off. And it'll spill off into this little circuit here that consists, whose active element is actually a capacitor. A capacitor, remember your E&M from the old days? What a capacitor does? What happens when you put charge on a capacitor? It stays there. What else? It induces a charge on the other side. That's right. And and what about the difference in something between one charge and the other? It's a voltage. It's an electromagnetic force. And so you have this charge that's produced a voltage. Voltages are nice because that's what electronics is all about. So we can measure that voltage. So we've moved these charge, taken a lot of effort to move them, dumped them off the CCD, put them in a circuit whose voltage we can measure, and that voltage is directly proportional to the charge that was measured. And this can be done for every single pixel out of 4 million because we're doing them one at a time. And we can know exactly which one it came from because we can count all of these electrical signals. This time history here is very nice because digital electronics, you just generate them. You just count. 357 times in one direction, 247 times in another direction gives you exactly a certain pixel in the detector. And so when it spills off the edge, the computer can take that, well, a number, I'll say that in a minute, can take that value of voltage and store it in the correct place in the memory of your computer, so that when it reconstructs the image on your display, it'll look right. Okay? That's about all there is to it. And just other details are, and I'll show this in a minute, a little bit more. We have other wires here that govern the output structure here involved with manipulating the charge once it's dumped. There's a reset gate. Gate is just a electronic term for field effect, for one of the elements of field effect transistors. Once you dump the charge onto this capacitor, you measure its voltage, then you want to throw it away. So the electronic term is reset. You want to reset it so the next pixel that goes on doesn't get added on top of it. You start fresh. Let's see. Output drain. The actual voltage comes on here. The capacitor is actually an element of a field effect transistor. And so these are real wires that come out of the CCD. On the CCD that I'm passing around, they're actually little bonding points. They're made of aluminum, and then they're little tiny gold wires that are welded to them and come out to the package and then come out on pins and then connect to the outside world. And then just to give it just a little bit of, I don't know, just the engineering sense of this. This is a map of all of the pixels. You have different phases. I was saying 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3. When you design the cameras and figure out how to operate the CCD, you have to know which one is next to which one and which one falls off the edge. This is actually from the manual, user's manual for quite a nice 2K CCD that was built in Oregon site. And it has the four outputs that I was motivating, which is common in electron microscopy. But this is all done with the lithography of the silicon. It's all very, everything's set in place, very rational, can be understood. Here I get to turn the tables on you a little bit. These are two electron microscopy pictures of the CCD structure. I've been showing this picture for 20 years. It's actually real old. This is just the second time I've been able to show it to the right audience. the idea is that it's all formed with conventional silicon technology and fabrication line. The idea is that you have these layers of insulation separating these structures here. These are the electrodes, I've called them. They're simply highly doped silicon to make it much more conductive than the substrate. And then in between, you have insulators that's made of silicon dioxide. The idea, though, is that these structures are not perfect, and they're relatively close, so there can easily be shorts. So that a lot of the technology of CCDs is trying to build something that has 4 million pixels or 12 million elements, because it's 3 elements per pixel, to build that without shorts, and without opens, although shorts are a lot more common. So a lot of this depends on the fabrication technology and the semiconductor business is what it all comes out of. I should say the CCD technology, the industry, is way smaller than the computer industry. And that wafer that I passed around, that's a 4-inch wafer. That came from a line. It was built about 11, 12 years ago. It came on a silicon fabrication line that had become obsolete 5 or 8 years before, and the CCD people got to take it over and build their specialized circuits. And then about 3 or 4 years after that device was built, the land, the factory, everything was dismantled, and the property was sold to developers. And now we have nice condos in Newport Beach there instead of CCD. And the company was Ford Aerospace. It got sold to Loral, and then it got sold to Fairchild, and it got sold to BAE, then it got sold back to an independent company called Fairchild Imaging. So it shows a little bit of signs of life. But I just say that because the CCD business is, this high-end scientific CCD business is pretty small and it's pretty fragile. There's always been trouble getting devices, actually buying these things. That's the soft, underbelly of the sheep. You know, it's a vulnerable part of this whole field. And you know, I can tell you it's great technology, but it's fragile because the economics of it isn't all that great. The devices are still very expensive. They're expensive for good reasons, one of them being that they're not mass-produced. Even though they use the silicon technology, which keeps getting better and better, the technology keeps getting more and more expensive, too. So, anyway. Okay, any questions there? Yes? Right. Do you want to go on, or do you want me to comment? I know what you're going to say. There are several things. One is the pixels are very small. The pixels on the electron microscope CCDs are, the ones I know about, are either 14 or 15 microns. The pixels on the devices you're describing are more like 4 or 5 microns. The physical sizes are very small. If you could compress your electron beam nicely into something that's a factor of 3 smaller, linearly smaller, then you'd have a chance to be able to use those devices. But that's really hard electron optics, like impossible electron optics. So you're paying a lot for the area. The 4K devices look like I was showing, it's this big. And you pay a lot for that area. The second thing is I was showing the readout noise of 10 electrons, or in astronomy cases where you read out real slowly, better than that. You can't get that from Sony. The noise is more like 30 or 40 or 50 electrons. Those are two big differences. A third big difference, which isn't common yet in electron microscopy, is the quantum efficiency that I showed upwards. I said 98%, maybe it's more like 90% in some, you know, more common commercially. That's hard to get. And none of the Sonys, none of the commercial Kodaks or anything like that have anything approaching that quantum efficiency. Now, there's some technology with electron microscopes that I'm not going to discuss much because I don't know a lot about them. But just to tell you briefly, there's a thinning technology that's used to achieve that high quantum efficiency, and that's expensive, and that's what you get with the high quantum efficiency. I don't know if that's available commercially quite yet in electron microscopy. There are commercial products. There is a commercial product now that's being ready that I'm working on to make those devices available with lens coupling, that where you have photons that go right on the CCD. The alternative technology is you don't go through the thinning process, and you shine the light through all those electrode structures that I was discussing. They have lower quantum efficiency. They're typically 40%. And those devices are a lot cheaper. And that's more characteristic of the quantum efficiencies from Sony. But just to summarize my answer, the big thing is the physical size and the noise of the devices are much inferior to what you want scientifically. That makes all the difference in the world. If the industry could sell 100,000 electron microscopes a year with big CCDs, then the cameras might be $10,000, not, I don't know what they want, $100,000, $150,000. You could get a large decrease in price, but never digital cameras out of your pocket. The limiting factor, he's asking why don't we make really big CCDs like the film? I don't want to use my hands. It's a really good question, and I was asked that question 6 months ago when I was here. Well, 4K and 4K is really nice, but I think it's the greatest money to get 8K by 8K. Didn't you say that? Okay. There are several reasons. One is you guys don't seem to like gaps. So you want, is that true? You don't like these gaps in the middle? I mean, for good reason, but you don't like gaps. So, I mean, I was working with this electron microscopy guy. I work with Gatan up in Pleasanton. So if you buy a Gatan controller, you'll see my stuff inside. So in the electronics, you see my software, it doesn't work. they said they'd get the image, and I show them images, and they would look like, in fact, I was going to show you one. I may as well show you right now. They'd look like this. Oh, it's not very bright. Well, you see here, it's a little bit brighter than here. That's the gap. Or it's not, that's the boundary. This is actually not a gap. This is a boundary between the bottom left readout and the top left. This is one piece of silicon. There is no physical gap, but you're reading it out from a different circuit down here. So you see a little bit of difference. They said, we don't like those gaps. Those gaps are awful. We can't sell this product without gaps. And they went through this monumental effort that unfortunately involved me somewhat to get rid of the gaps. To astronomers, the gaps are great. That means you're not. It's not a virtual image created by the computer. You're actually looking at the sky. But in answer to your question, if you didn't want gaps, you could use smaller devices and just get a lot of these CCDs together in the focal plane, and that would be possible. The big difficulty with getting CCDs this big is there are two or three difficulties. One is that it's real difficult for CCD manufacturers to get onto the production lines in the silicon business with the kind of monies that are available in order to could get onto like a 8-inch wafer or... So the CCD manufacturers, nowadays, they're using older equipment on smaller fabrication lines. That's a fundamental reason. There are two or three CCD manufacturers now, and they all have small lines because of the cost. It takes many tens of millions of dollars to buy those lines, and the CCD process is specialized enough and needs to be well controlled enough that they have trouble using regular commercial lines. Have trouble. There have been attempts that have been of modest success. The other reason I was showing is that one little short between elements and the whole device is ruined. So the bigger you get, the worse trouble you have with yield. If you have one wafer and you have four devices on there, one short, hey, that's pretty good. You got three CCDs. That's good. If you wanted one CCD without a short, you get a short, the whole thing is ruined. So the yield, the number of devices you'll get out of your fabrication line will go way down the larger you get. The third reason I would say is that, and this is a pretty central theme to my next idea here, and that is that the time it takes to get the charges out gets to be long when you get larger and larger. So the one technique we have is to have four readouts occurring simultaneously, one from each corner. If you just have a bigger device and you still have only four, it's going to take a long time to get the image out, and you guys are going to complain. So you have to build a CCD a little bit differently so you have many other readout circuits, many more of these places where you dump the charge out. Three reasons, that's pretty good, yeah? Well, do you see the gap?
Yeah.
You see the gap? Wow. Let's see. Okay, it's this little cartoon here. In this type of CCD, the four readout CCDs, it's one piece of silicon, it's all one mask. There are no, the differences between left and right at the boundary are negligible. They're really tiny. Much less than 1%. The difference is that this output circuitry here is a little bit different from that, and the electronics that processes that is a little different. They might differ by a percent in the gain and the offset. And so software can correct for most of that, but not quite all of it. So it's really in this circuit here and the post-processing that are different. For the CCD that's one CCD that's monolithic. This one here is separate CCDs. I don't think you're using that in microscopy at all, but this one is completely separate. This has physical gaps between them just because they're separate CCDs that are then put together. But actual physical gaps. If you have this kind of a system, but I doubt if you have that. It's probably this, and it's just different processing. Yeah. I heard about that. Quadrant corrections? Do you know about quadrant corrections? Yeah, that business. Okay, let me try and go on a little bit with these to motivate the idea that it takes a while to read these devices. In the case of the 4K by 4K, the astronomers are perfectly happy to have 16 million pixels and to take half a minute or even a minute to read it out because they look at an object for 5 or 10 minutes, the time where your shutter is closed and you're just figuring out what your image was perfectly acceptable. But this crowd here, you guys, they said, no, it can't be that. Part of it is focusing and sample preparation. And so, that's not the right slide. And so that time was explained to me really needs to be short. And the closer you get to video rates, the better off you are. So I want to put this one up. So what I'm showing here is I'm trying to go a little bit in more detail in the time domain. This is a cartoon of the output structure. You go in these phases here. This is H for horizontal, because usually it's horizontal. That's what I had moving to the left. Now I have it moving to the right. You go to this output gate, and that little arrow there, right there, that's the little capacitor that's actually part of the transistor, and you get a video out. These are the signals that I'm showing that actually move the charge. And what realistically happens in the electron microscopes is that you have time here and a time here where you're actually measuring the signal. You're measuring the voltage. And the longer you take, the better you can measure it just by averaging. This time here, from here to here, between pixels, is about 1 microsecond. This time here of measuring, averaging the signal is about 3/4 of that. So you spend about 1/4 of the time moving the charge around, 3/4 of the time actually measuring it. Okay? And this is a pretty good representation of the video signal coming out. These are different. This voltage here is what's proportional to the charge that I was talking about, and these lines just represent different signal levels. And you go and measure the difference between the reset, or the zero signal level, and the signal level. Okay? So a trick can be done to try and speed things up if you're not happy with spending 4.5 seconds reading out this 4K integer. What you can do is put it in binning mode. In binning mode, you actually degrade the resolution of the detector by a factor of 2, typically in each direction, so you still have a square image. And so it looks like, instead of a 4K detector, it looks like a 2K detector. And the advantage of that is that the clocking operations that are relatively fast, that are 1/4 of this pixel time, they can be done quickly. And so you can do 2 of those operations for every 1 operation of the video sampling, of the signal averaging. So you can get not quite a factor of 2 improvement in this dimension in readout speed, but close. You get about a factor of 1 and 1.7 or so improvement in speed. And in the other direction, you get to almost just the other direction doesn't matter very much. It's a very small contributor. So you can read out the device, if you put it in binning mode, you can read it out almost about 3 times, maybe 3.2 times as fast. So your 4.5 second readout time, if you degrade the resolution, will be like 1.5 seconds or so. So that's an option in electron microscopes if you want to degrade the resolution, either because your science merits it, or because you're setting up and you still want to look at the whole field, you can do that. And it's just by changing these clocking. It's all programmable with a little computer. You can just change it, go into binning mode. Is that clear? What happens is that that little capacitor that you have that I keep talking about dumping the charge on, you simply dump 2 charges onto it instead of 1. And then you read it. And then you reset it. You drain away the charge to go for the next. So you just have 2 of them. That's in one direction. You do the same thing in the parallel direction. You have 2 lines at a time, one on top of another. You can play another trick, which is shown here, and that's skipping. You can just activate this little reset gate. You see, I only have 1 at the top. I have 2 of them here. You can simply clock this charge out and then reset it, just throw it away. And where that's useful is, particularly in focusing, if you're really only interested in one part of your image, like in the middle there, you can skip these lines pretty quickly, and you get to the region where you want, where the lines are of interest, and you can skip these in that fast pixel at a time skipping until you reach the region of interest. Then you slow down enough to process the pixels, do your signal averaging, transfer the image, and then, unfortunately, you have to skip these too because you got to get rid of the charge sitting in the CCA. You have to get rid of it. So this is typically like 1/4 of the image or 1/2 of the image. It'll just take a little region in the center. Very good for focusing. And that happens much faster. That might be, the goal is to make that video rate so that you can get instantaneous feedback. It's not quite there. But I was really impressed to see this once with our cameras. They had software that would display. You could sort of move your sample and follow it almost in real time. But that's a fundamental operational aspect property of CCDs that's quite valuable. You don't Okay, you can actually manipulate the charge rather nicely with these external signals. Okay, so we actually do that in astronomy. This is kind of a funny image. We're interested just in this, we're interested mostly in this star, just taking a time series, call it fast photometry. Just look at that star, and it varies, brightness varies a lot. It has very active. Typically, it's two stars going around each other, and they have a lot of mass transfer between them. Sometimes it's unstable. So you just sit there at your telescope for 5 or 6 hours and just measure the brightness and derive your astrophysical insight from that. You also want to measure some other regions in the same field, sky for subtracting your background, maybe a comparison star because it can be cloudy and maybe your variations are due to clouds or smoke from fires or something like that. So you look at something else that's hopefully not varying in time. And you only read out these regions. The rest of it you skip over. And so you can do this. It's a small CCD. I'm doing a project where it's just tiny CCD, like 512 by 512, and getting 20 or 30 frames per second. In fact, the optical fluorescence people are real excited by this. They want to do time series of fluorescent samples. And this is just plotting just the images that were read out, the star image, the comparison image. These are crummy quality. But this is the only data you'll actually get out of the CCD. The rest of it you throw away. Okay? Any questions? Yep. Can it wear out? You know, I don't know. I mean, sometimes these CCDs die on me. I had a CCD that just spontaneously died after about 6 or 7 years. I don't know if it wore out or I don't know. It can wear out due to very high energy events. Yes, there's radiation damage. That's what you're talking about, yes. There's definitely radiation damage if you have something powerful like that. Due to the light sort of diffraction, it's got to wear out a little bit, but it's very slow. This is just very brief. I've got my 12 minutes here to go. These are the electronic processing sort of circuits that I work with a lot. We have this clock driver is generating these signals that go up and down. They go into the CCD, but typically about a dozen or so, maybe 15, 16 signals like that to move it around. These are the three phases in each direction and some other sort of miscellaneous thing. Then you get your video signal coming out. These are two videos that I've shown here go into this processor. It does that signal averaging that I talked about. It also converts the signal into an digital number. It has analog to digital converters that we buy commercially that are quite good, fortunately. 16 bits in the case of the electron microscope cameras. And then the image data gets sent to the computer. It used to be 18-bit image data, but it's 16-bit. There's a timing board, which is a digital sort of thing that generates all of these ups and downs, and it's very programmable to do skipping or binning or one quadrant or four. I have this mode where you just read from one of the corners of the CCD if you don't want to do it all four simultaneously. And if you have four readouts, you do multiple clock drivers like that, multiple video processors. We have a shutter typically in astronomy. We have fiber optic data link, which has turned out to be very nice. I designed it initially for astronomy where it's really hostile electromagnetic environment. The telescope is at some distance from the computer. And I just wanted real good electrical isolation. And the electron microscopy people thought that was great, so they kept it for the same reason. And then to finish up, I want to show you some images. There are three types of images you should be aware of that are calibration, non-science, just to see what your detector is doing. In astronomy, we call this one a flat. It doesn't look very flat, but if you shine a field that is uniform intensity on the CCD, you won't get completely uniform image coming out. This one is an extreme, okay? This one is actually in the red, where you get a lot of interference fringes due to Moiré effect, standing waves between the front surface and the back surface of the CCD. If the wavelength of light is long enough that it doesn't get absorbed very much, you get standing wave patterns. Doesn't that look like a high school physics kind of a illustration? You know, the waves in the water, you used to do that? More typically, you might see something like this. These lines are actually real in this CCD that I'm passing around. They're little dips of about 1% in efficiency due to an alignment error, the mask. These CCDs are made with little masks that go repeating like this. They step and repeat. So they make one really high quality mask, and then they just illuminate the steps during the lithographic process by moving it along. Well, they messed up a little bit on the vertical separation of the mask steps. So you can see this in this particular CC. This is not common. But something that's done with electron microscopes is you take uniform illumination fields and it calibrates the sensitivity variations pixel to pixel. And typically those variations are 1% or so, typical. But you can, with corrections, you can make that so it's much less than a tenth of a percent. Basically, you can make it pretty easily limited by the statistics of the photon detection process. But that's an important calibration to know about. Second thing you can do, and should be done in electron microscopes, is dark curves. I didn't talk about this much because I keep thinking we have photons coming into the CCD, and they're what excites the silicon so that you have the minority carriers or electron light things accumulating in the electrodes. Well, if just at room temperature, just by the thermal vibration of the silicon lattice, you'll get lots of excited electrons as well. And at room temperature, it's really a lot, and that's called dark current. Even though it's in the dark, you'll still get current in these devices. You'll still get electrons moving. So what electron microscopists do is they cool it down to about minus 40, minus 50, 30 degrees centigrade, so that this is minimized. What astronomers do, we'll cool it down to minus 110 because we do much longer exposure by using liquid nitrogen or a closed cycle refrigerator. But still, you have to understand what the dark current is. You have to measure it, especially if you're at minus 40 or minus 30 degrees C. And typically with electron microscopes, that's kind of done automatically, but certainly if you're doing anything more than a few seconds exposure time, you will get some contribution to the image from dark current. This is an extreme. This is 30 minutes exposure, just keeping it cold and dark. And these little dots are cosmic rays. The CCDs are excellent detectors of cosmic rays, muons mostly that come through our atmosphere, secondary muons that are produced by primary energetic protons in the upper atmosphere come barreling down here. And they're detected very nicely by the CCD. You typically don't have to worry about them because you have large area CCDs and your exposure times are short. But there they are. If you see something really funny in your image and you're about to apply for a Nobel Prize, maybe it's a cosmic ray. And then I thought I'd just spend the last few minutes talking a little bit about the challenges in electron microscopy. I put the requirement on the left. And I said our approach, meaning my little group at San Diego State and others, about sort of how we handle the challenge of building our CCD cameras for electron microscopy. Some of it we did, of course, some of it was just choosing things in the industry. There's a big requirement from large areas, so the 2K. 2K meaning 2048. These tend to go in powers of two, there's pixels. There's no physical reason for it, but it's kind of tradition. 2K means 2048 pixels by 2048. 4K is 4096. And large pixel sizes, that's why they're expensive. Fast readout, it was a real challenge to develop fast readout for the electron microscopy crew. We do four channels at a time through one CCD, and we've been doing that a lot for many years. They're processed completely simultaneously. They're all at the same time. Four data streams get joined together a little bit before they go into the computer. 1 microsecond per pixel, a million pixels per second times four, so it's really 4 million per second. Low noise, go to a lot of trouble to carefully measure the electronic signal coming out of the CCD by using good signal sampling and averaging techniques. Careful design, well, you can always argue about that. Dynamic range, you want to be able to measure bright signals and faint signals. Typically, faint signal is something that may be comparable to or less bright than the readout noise, which is typically around 10 or 15 electrons for electron microscopy. Mississippi system, or ones where the wells of the CCD are full or close to being full. You want to be able to sample over that whole range. And you need about a 15-bit A to D converter. It's several parts. And it's like a part of 20,000 or 30,000 is needed. So the 16-bit A to D is needed in this application. Constrained space, this is a new one. You guys they build these electron microscopes with this amount of space for the camera. So our approach was to have as little electronics as possible near the CCD, and that's just a preamplifier and a little bit of signal shaping, and then ship the whole thing over this gigantically long five-meter cable to this box way over there. That was hard. I don't feel real comfortable about that, and future designs that we'll do are going to go the other way. We're going to shrink the electronics down so we can fit it in these ridiculously small spaces underneath the electron microscope. They're used in the vacuum, so there's actually motion between the CCD and the stuff, and there's this little flexible flex wire, they call it. It's pretty common in industry. It's a kind of a printed circuit board on thin plastic and metal. Spinning and subarray readout, I explained to you, that's real intrinsic to the whole way we do things with CCD controllers. Everything's very programmable. It's all in software. Just one small note here, the controllers we make for electron microscopes can be used either with the 2K devices made in France by Atmel or the 4K devices made up in Milpitas in Silicon Valley. Very different manufacturers, very different requirements, but we made it for all the electronics except the very, very closest thing to the CCD are the same. Very different software, of course. Quadrant matching I described a little bit, but there's this bias subtraction, the flat field correction, I explained to you just why it's important. This is done a lot in software in real time by the camera. And, hey, 2 minutes to go. 2 minute question. Yes? That's the quantum efficiency. The quantum efficiency of commercially available devices now, about 60% is lost. There's a 40% quantum efficiency of the CCDs that are thick, that are less expensive. There's one that I'm working on now that is light coupled, a gigantic lens that's more like, 90% efficient, so only about 10% would be lost. It's not a big factor in electron microscopy because of the multiplication. Well, not multiplication. Because the electrons are so energetic, they produce multiple photons. So for each electron event, you get a detection on the CCD of 100% because there are many photons produced from each electrode, from each electron. How do you record? I didn't hear that. The color? Oh, yeah. The CCD itself doesn't record anything about color. It's kind of binary. It's either detected or not. Whether it's detected from blue, red, or green, it's the same. In commercial cameras, they have little filters that they put on each pixel that are different. They have little patterns of red, green, and blue. In astronomy, we take separate images with the same color filter over the entire CCD and reconstruct them in software later. Asking about about pixel size. I'm not a real expert at this, but I think what's important is silicon area. It's really the fundamental attribute of detectors in your field, in microscopy. And you want to make the pixels small enough so that they're not degrading the resolution. If you make them too small, what happens is you have a lot of overhead of moving the charge around from pixel to pixel, and you'll get affected by that. So you really don't want to have something that's 20,000 by 20,000 pixels that are each 5 microns across, because you spend most of the time just spinning your wheels. The bleeding effect you're talking about with scintillators, I don't know. I don't know what that is. Yes. Now I understand. You can. If your scintillator isn't working well, or the resolution of it is degraded, yes, it can generate a photon cloud, which is spread over many pixels. In fact, for many years, this company I worked with, they sold 2K cameras that actually had a 4K CCD inside, but they degraded the resolution a factor of 2 in each direction because their scintillators were lower resolution. So they improved the scintillators and then got in touch with me to build a 4 readout so that when they went to 4K by 4K true detection, that they wouldn't suffer too much in speed. I think, okay. Yes? Yes, you can. If you have high signal to noise, you have neighboring pixels, you can interpolate and figure out what the light would have been in between the pixels. You can do that. You can do that in your software post-processing, if you're interested. Yeah. I take the approach that the pixel data goes into the computer, and that's something that the users can worry about. That's why I went like this. Yeah, the question was about when you couple your whatever it is in front of the CCD to get your photons through the relative efficiencies. I don't know. I can't answer.
You told us that technology is
68.
Is it going to go forever?
Yeah, it's a real good question. The technology is moving where the CCD of transferring these pixels off to the corner, that's being challenged by building the readout circuitry onto each pixel. I have that little transistor there. You can build a couple little switches, and then you can actually convert the electric charge into a voltage at each pixel, and you can address it. You can amplify it and address it individually. That technology is CMOS. Actually, it's used in cameras, in still cameras a lot. That, I think what's going to happen is we're going to have hybrids of CCDs for the detection process, that is the sort of PMS, the layers of silicon, with that structure as a readout structure. In CMOS? They're fairly large. They're physically small. The pixels are small just because that's the market. So none are available in large silicon. It has to do with the noise. The noise is still relatively high, and there are some other details of the readout process that prohibit their use in these high-end scientific applications. But I think that's progressing. I think that's going to be the next big move. Mm-hmm. Right. In CMOS devices, there's no charge motion or no charge transfer. That's right. Right. They have higher noise because of the details of building that detection and readout circuitry millions of times. There are some other details about it that make it hard. Thank you very much. Okay, do I get my CCD back?
And then we move on to the afternoon practical. Groups 1, 2, and 3 will be on a microscope. Gordy, Howe, and Drew Dreyer. 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10.
Which environment are you developing this one?
There's software they have in the cameras that's embedded for all of them. Those details. That's all. I use digital signal processors, write them in assembly language.
And then.
Oh, that software, yeah. I do too. So.
Is there anything like for Linux?
Yeah. Our systems are for Linux.
Really?
Yeah, and Sun Solaris.
Uh huh. And so you have a web page or to see what you did, or is it proprietary, or what?
Well, when I say our system, the work we did for electron microscopes was just for this company, and they're exclusively Windows.
Yeah, that's the problem.
Yeah.
I think we would go much faster. I can see from the technology when you think of games and software, it's awfully slow. If you could actually run this software and get the stuff on a separate computer, Linux box, and power it up.
Yeah.
Yes, I could do that. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, here. Oh, you want this?